We've got a lot of folks. We normally are small this time for this part of the service, but we got several regulars away, and Brother Bragg was one of those, and he had the Bible reading this morning. So I'll do that if you turn to 1 Peter, the first chapter, beginning in verse 6. Peter says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls." As we mentioned when we first started looking at this first chapter of 1 Peter, Peter writes this epistle to encourage believers to persist in their faith in spite of the challenges that confront them. He began the epistle by praising God for his provision of salvation to those who had committed themselves by their faith to the Lord Jesus Christ. And now in this lesson, Peter proceeds to remind them that the joy of serving Christ can be realized even though the vagaries of life can include periods of trial and suffering. So we want to look at what Peter has to say about that this morning. And so he talks about the proof of their faith. And in the passage we looked at a couple of weeks ago, Peter pointed out to them in 1 Peter 1 verses 4 and 5 that their salvation had been obtained through their faith. He said in 1 Peter 1 and verse 4, "To obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, that is reserved in heaven for you, who are protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time." So in the text that we just read for today, Peter makes two important observations about that. The first of all is the reaction that Christians should have to that promise of salvation. He says salvation gives them cause to rejoice. He says you should greatly rejoice in verse 7. And I think that looks to the conclusion of this short passage in verse 9, where he says that the outcome of that faith is the salvation of your souls. And so that salvation that results because we are servants of Christ is a reason for great joys. But the second thing that he says about our lives as Christians is that the Christian life will include trials. Now, the Greek word that is used here and is translated in our English Bible as trials means to try to learn the nature or character of someone or something by submitting such to thorough and extensive testing. And so the trial in this case is a test. It means to test, to examine, to put to the test. And Peter says that these trials may come in various forms. Persecution is possible. And many people believe that persecution is all that Peter has in mind in the book of 1 Peter. I don't think that's necessarily so. It's not the only form of testing that we may undergo in our lives as Christians. However, regardless of what the source of the particular testing is, it can cause Christians to suffer. Now, that word often we put in the most extreme sense of someone who is undergoing great pain or great trial. When we look at the various translations, not all of them say suffer. The New American Standard, which I read from most of the time, says distress. English Standard Version and the New King James and the American Standard all use the word grief or grievous. It's the NFI, the Revised Standard, the International Standard all use the word suffering. Interesting enough, the Old King James, which most people do not use, simply says the heaviness. Sometimes it can just be something that burdens you. And the Christian Standard Bible uses the word struggles, so that your life will have these kind of things. But what Peter really says about that is that there's value to that, because these periods of testing provide Christians the proof that their faith is genuine. You remember Jesus' warning that's contained really within the framework of his famous parable of the sower, when he talked about the seed that fell among thorny grounds. In Luke 8 and verse 13, he says, those on the rocky soil, are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy, and these have no firm root. They believe for a while, but in time of temptation, they fall away. And so he says, there are some who will accept my gospel, but when the trials come, that will be the end of it. And so this undergoing of trial of different types by those of us that are Christians serves the purpose of proving that our faith is genuine. We get through it because we maintain our faith. The New American Standard says proof. The ESV, which is our pew Bible, says the tested genuineness of your faith. In other words, it's been put to the test and demonstrated to be genuine. Peter says that tested faith is more valuable than gold that has been tested by fire. And so we are familiar with the fact that precious metals are often purified and tested by fire. But Peter says when you stand as your tests and trials as a Christian, and you get through that test and your faith has been proven that you are remaining faithful to God, that's more valuable than any gold that you might have. William Barclay, famous English commentator, says about that, in this world, trial and affliction are not meant to take the strength out of us, but they are meant to put the strength into us. And that's the idea of that we are tested. And so he says, when you have seen that the proof of your faith, then that leads you to the outcome of your faith. So the purpose of this testing is to produce a spiritual outcome. And the immediate outcome in the life of the Christian is the affirmation to us that we have stood this test, so we are able to stand any other tests. James says in James 1 and verse 2, consider it all joy, my brother, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And so he says, that brings you to your outcome, the strengthening of it. I'm a very personal little illustration of this. My grandnephew, Wesley's son, Braden, used to be a very overweight young person, a real couch potato. And at some point, he decided that wasn't going to be it anymore. And he and his dad started running together. And I was told that he had trouble making a half mile the first day. Well, about a month ago, he competed in the Columbus Mini Marathon. And I saw him the week after that. And I said, how did that go? He said, I finished. I said, well, that's good. He says, I'm going to run a marathon next. I'm going to go from 13 miles to 26 miles. And by the way, he's no longer a chubby little fellow. He's a teenager, and the girls are really interested in him. And he told me the other night, I got a new car. So now the girls are really going to be interested in him, right? But anyhow, that's the point. You start, you can't even make a mile. But then you can do that, and that proves to you can do it, so you set another goal. And Peter says that's what happens when, as a Christian, you undergo trial successfully. It gives you the confidence that you can face other trials. And so when we successfully complete a trial, it gives us the ability to and know that we are equipped to go on to other trials. And thus, the ultimate outcome, Peter says, of that is the salvation of our souls. Verse 9, obtaining the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Paul says in Romans 8, for I consider, verse 18, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. So whatever we have to successfully go and undergo in order to prove or get the outcome of our faith, Paul says what will be ahead of us is so much more glorious than that. And Peter, even later in the epistle, we're only going to look at the first chapter in this series, but down in 1 Peter 4 and verse 12, he says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. Whatever we suffer now in trial, through our trials, regardless of where they come from, keeping our faith and being faithful through that will result in ultimate glory, Peter says. And of course, the key to that is because Christians are to have a different perspective about life. The Christian sees the world differently than the world around him. Peter points out several ways in which the Christian experience is different than the way the world will look at it. It is what is called a paradox. Now, a dictionary definition of paradox, this one's an online from dictionary.com, says a paradox is a statement that seems self-contradictory or absurd, but in reality expresses a possible truth. And so, Peter in this passage has at least three paradoxical statements that brings us to the outcome of our faith, the salvation of our soul. And so I would suggest to you that this definition is from a human perspective, and it says a possible truth. But we're going to look at three things Peter says in our text this morning as we bring this to a close that are given by inspiration. So we would change for our purpose this morning this definition to say that these paradoxes are not things that seem self-contradictory or absurd that express a possible truth. They seem to be self-contradictory or from a human perspective even absurd, but they express an absolute truth because it is the truth that is inspired by God. The first of these paradoxic things that Peter mentions in this passage is the paradox of Christian joy. Because we tend to think, and from a human perspective, that joy comes from pleasant things. We have a birthday and we get joy out of the things that are done for us and the gifts that are given us. We get joy when something really good happens. We get a promotion at work, or our team wins the big ball game, or somebody tells us we've done a good job. But Peter says in the Christian life, great joy can come out of the things which distress us, the things which gives us trial. Christians face the same types of trials that are common to all men in this fallen world in which we live. Christians have to deal with illness of themselves and others that they love. We have to deal with death. We have to deal with the negative things of life. Christians lose their jobs. Christians lose their earthly wealth. Christians are sometimes mistreated by their friends and their loved ones. Those things all happen to us not because we're Christians, but because we're men living in a world that has already been stained and destroyed by sin. And we live with the consequences of those sins. But in addition to that, and Peter goes on to point that out in this epistle, Christians also sometimes suffer simply because they have made the choice to commit their lives to Christ. And all of that seems very negative. And the normal human response to such trials may be angst, may be depression, may be grief, desperation, turning to things like drugs and alcohol that just further deepen the problems. But the Christian can face life's trials, including persecution, from a different perspective. And Jesus set that forth at the very beginning of his ministry in the Sermon on the Mount, when he said in Matthew 5 and verse 11, "Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So Christians can take a different look at that and the difficult things in life simply because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And that's really the second paradox, that paradox of Christian faith. We've already talked about that in the lesson this morning, but I do want to point out to you that it is a second one of those paradox statements. The more your faith is challenged, the greater and stronger it can become. And so Jack Cottrell, in his commentary on 1 Peter about that, says, "Though we may be enduring trying times because of faith, that just makes our faith stronger." And then the third one is the paradox of salvation. And here's why that is paradoxical. The very nature of salvation is paradoxical, seems to be contradictory. Peter said in 1 Peter 1 and verse 4, a passage we looked at the last time, that salvation is in the future. Even this passage speaks of it as our outcome of our faith. 1 Peter 1 and verse 4 says it's reserved in heaven. 1 Peter 1 and verse 5 says it's going to be revealed to us in the last time. And as we've said in the text we looked at this morning, he says it's the outcome of our faith is the salvation of our souls. Salvation is the end result of the Christian life. It's out there. But in making that promise of our future, here's the paradoxical nature of this. Peter makes this very important statement. He says that by believing in him, we are obtaining the outcome of our salvation. The interesting thing about that is that the other expressions we've talked about, reserved in heaven, revealed in the last time, outcome, are all in the future tense. It's all out there. But obtaining is in the present tense. You see the significance of that? While I am looking for the future and the outcome and the end result, I'm a saved person now because I'm in the process of obtaining what is there in the future. While the inheritance of salvation is still in the future, Peter says we are getting it right now. What we do as we experience the things in this life, even the things that test us, are God's way of giving us our salvation. This is Peter's great message of our assurance. We sing this old hymn all the time, not as much maybe as we used to. When sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say. Not it will be well. It is well with my soul. I think that's Peter's message in this passage this morning. I'm going to ask Brother John to lead our prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to our class.